There was another case at the High Court that got our attention recently. The justices ruled July 9th that a large part of the state of Oklahoma is part of the Muscogee Creek Nation's reservation territory. The case was huge news for tribal sovereignty, but its influence was not limited to Oklahoma. The ruling could affect a lawsuit filed by the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians against the state of Michigan. Matthew Fletcher is a law professor at MSU and director of the Indigenous Law and Policy Center at the school. He's also a member of the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians. Matthew Fletcher, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
When we hear that the Supreme Court declared that much of the eastern half of Oklahoma is considered reservation land belonging to the Muscogee Creek Nation, what does that actually mean? Does it substantially change things for members of the tribe there?
It kind of doesn't. The main thing is it has to do with who would prosecute felonies, you know, major crimes, we call them, in Indian law. So tribal members that normally otherwise would have been prosecuted by Oklahoma, who are now in Indian country within a reservation, would be prosecuted by the federal government or potentially the tribe itself.
This is a longstanding and kind of bitter issue across many different kinds of communities and many different kinds of tribal communities. Could you maybe fill us in on why the stakes have been so high for who's going to prosecute what when crimes happen across tribal land?
Well, one of the reasons this case reached the Supreme Court is that one of the defendants at issue is actually on death row in Oklahoma. And normally, Indian country murders do not result in a capital punishment prosecution. The federal government usually, not always, but usually will defer to a tribe's wishes on whether or not it wants to seek the death penalty for a serious murder. And so that's one of the key aspects to this case, is that Oklahoma had put one of the defendants on death row. The other aspects are sort of amorphous. They're more symbolic, more than anything. So if you look at Oklahoma's list of grievances about why it would be a problem for big swaths of its territory to be considered Indian country, and you really drill down into what they're talking about, they're talking about the possibility of maybe the Federal Environmental Protection Agency having more jurisdiction over some of the oil and gas activities in that area. They're talking about some tax things, but it's really very amorphous and really nonspecific as to what the impacts could be. And there is a lot of fear-mongering related to a case like this. And this is not, and Oklahoma is not unique. Other places do the same thing when they are confronted with reservation boundaries cases.
What was your reaction when you got a look at the decision?
Well, I thought it was amazing. Justice Gorsuch's opinion talked about how tribes have suffered through broken promises in their treaties. He talked about how Oklahoma's complaints were overstated. He talked about how, really, Indian people and tribes have gone through a lot of torment over the centuries, really, and it was only fair to treat them fairly and normally in this context, and to respect the promises that the United States has made to tribes. And you occasionally will see language like that in an opinion, but for the most part, the Supreme Court rarely ever talks about the tribe's understanding of a treaty or the tribe's understanding of federal and state laws, and really just focuses on how a tribe's assertion of rights or interests will affect non-Indians. This was one of the rare, maybe the only times where the court actually paid attention to and gave respect to how a case like this would impact Indian people.
Let's shift gears over to the Little Traverse Bay Band's lawsuit against Michigan's state government. Their claim concerns a treaty that was signed in 1855, and they're seeking 300 acres of land. Can you give us a little background on this case and how they came to file it?
Well, the 1855 treaty is an unusual treaty in that it establishes a reservation through a process called allotment. And so what it is that normally a reservation, you just carve off a bunch of areas, an area of law or a parcel of land, and you say, tribe, this is your reservation. And later on, Congress might come in and carve up that reservation and start giving it away or selling it off to other people. And that's when you have these reservation diminishment cases. But with Little Traverse, the United States never actually did that. They never actually surveyed the reservation. They never actually did implemented the treaty in any meaningful way. So Indian people never got the lands they were promised. And most of that land went directly to non-Indians without ever passing through Indian ownership. And so the big similarity between the McGirt case and the Little Traverse case that I can see is that both were involved this process of allotment, which is a complicated process that's a little bit different than just creating a reservation and saying, tribe, you own it all by yourself, do whatever you want with it. Allotment means that individual tribal members own the reservation. So that happened at Little Traverse, and that happened also with the McGirt case, the Muscogee Creek Reservation. So there's a similarity there between the two. But the main difference between those two cases is that Little Traverse's case, they never actually got their lands, whereas the Muscogee Creek Nation members did get their lands. And so in some ways, the Little Traverse case is a much more sympathetic case, but a much more difficult case in terms of impacts to consider from the purposes, from the point of view of non-members, non-Indians.
Now, the most recent history on this is last August, a federal judge ruled that the 1855 treaty did not create a reservation, and that decision is what's now on appeal at the Sixth Circuit level. How do you see the McGirt decision impacting that appeal?
Well, it really has a lot to do with the methodology of how courts reason these cases, these reservation boundaries cases. Until the McGirt case, it was possible for states, the federal government on occasion, and non-members to say, well, you know, maybe you had a reservation boundary and maybe it's still there, but too many people have moved into the area. Too much land has gone out of Indian ownership. And because of the weight of history, I'm sorry, your reservation is gone. Now, if we take the McGirt opinion by its word, that analysis is irrelevant. Justice Gorsuch said it doesn't matter what happened to the reservation after it was created. All that matters is Congress can create the reservation, and only Congress can divest a tribe of its reservation, not the passage of time, not the weight of history, not land ownership or the demographics of the reservation residents. And if that's the case, it could potentially really upset the decision in the Little Traverse case made by the trial court.
Matthew Fletcher is director of the Indigenous Law and Policy Center at Michigan State University. Matthew, thanks for laying out the issues for us, and safe travels.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.